I see that we got off to a little bit of a late start. We had trouble getting in the building, and I was saying, oh no, we need to get in there. I want to talk. And but it's okay. I've been locked out of better places. So anyways, here I am. So good evening. I want to again thank the organizers for inviting me. It's a great pleasure to be here this evening and to address you as a group. And I know the activists and the brothers and sisters who support the cause, the fight for freedom and the struggle for justice. I want to welcome all the women and the brothers who are here tonight, and sisters and elders. I want to begin by mentioning the Mississauga First People of this territory, unceded territory, in which is now Toronto. And I'm very pleased to remember them, because this was their home way before anybody else came along. I want to address you tonight regarding the undeclared war on Aboriginal people in this country, and particularly focus on the undeclared war against women. We've come up with an estimate that there are approximately 500 Aboriginal women missing over the past 15 years across the country. And it's become an issue for me that I've been involved with for about 10 years. And it's very close and near and dear to my heart. And this is one of the issues I find that doesn't get enough press and doesn't get enough attention. So I thank you very much for your commitment to coming here on a Friday night. And I'm sure there are a million things to do in Toronto, but you're here, and I'm very impressed with that. The women who have gone missing are not missing women, as they talk about. They have not just gone missing accidentally or just disappeared somehow. Their disappearances are very intentional and very well planned. And it's no doubt of mine that many, many will go if we don't do something about this issue. I know women who have gone missing from the Vancouver downtown east side, where there are currently 67 women missing. Women's organizations say there are 90. And the official police reports say there are 50. So I want to share with you tonight that these women are very important to our nations, because we are a dwindling population and there are very few of us, and we need our women to live and to prepare our warriors for the future to fight for our land and for our freedom. Our Missing Sisters Coalition started, and the official name is the National Coalition for Our Stolen Sisters. And this was started, spearheaded by the Native Women's Association of Canada out of Ottawa. And I've been working on this tirelessly, as well as my staff. We are having a rally, which is the first national rally on Parliament Hill on February 14th, which will be where we will have a rally. Of course, folks of your type supporting us and coming out to gain awareness and gain some more support for our cause. I want us to think about how the buffalo has disappeared, and that's a very close analogy of what can happen to our people. There are around 5,000 of us of my nation left, and my cousin is here tonight. I think there's 5,000, around that. And I spoke to the Human Rights Commission in Ottawa last week, and they said to me there are 400 million Aboriginal people and only 50 million in North America. Why would they be concerned about us? And I said, that's exactly the issue, why they should be concerned about us, because we will become an extinct society, extinct people, and we need to have concerns, and a lot of concern. So over the past 15, 20 years, there are 500 women gone missing. There's a book, a very good book, called Just Another Indian, which was written by Warren Golding on a serial killer and Canada's indifference. And this book traces the crimes, prosecution, and conviction, and the media treatment surrounding the killer Crawford in Saskatchewan. The focus had never gone to the victims. All of the focus was on the killer throughout the whole proceeding. And Golding's book suggests again in support that there are at least 500 missing Aboriginal women. It was obvious that there was a serial killer at work, and he was second only to Clifford Robert Olson, who killed 12 children in Vancouver, in the Vancouver Lower Mainland area. And when we talk about missing Aboriginal women and missing women of the who have gone, poor women, marginalized women, they didn't get any exposure, very little exposure in comparison to what had gone on in the Clifford Olson and the Paul Bernardo case. We heard very little about these women who disappeared. The lives of Aboriginal women are viewed as disposable in this country called Canada. Media coverage was non-existent on the issues, as there was little justice for Aboriginal people and little concern for their lives. I mentioned there are about approximately 67 missing in the Vancouver area. The first young woman to go missing, her name was Rebecca Gounod, and she was the first of the 50 official report of the police. And she went missing in 1983. The 50th woman to go missing was 26-year-old Mona Wilson, who disappeared in November of 2001. The RCMP became involved in the case in 2001, and no charges were laid until 2002, 19 years after the first disappearance. By 1999, 31 women were missing. The worst year was 1998, when 10 women vanished from the face of the earth, with 7 disappearances in 1999. No one cared about these women because they were poor and involved in the sex trade activities. They were drug addicts, alcoholics, suffered from mental disorders, including FAS and FAE. Were victims of childhood sexual abuse, grew up in foster homes, and somewhere along the line became disillusioned and gave up on life. 60% of these women were Aboriginal and predominantly young. They had families, they had hopes, and they had dreams. They left behind grieving communities, grandmothers, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, and sadly, young children of their own. These young women belonged somewhere, and they were loved. In 1992, the first Valentine's Day march was held to remember the missing women, in which I attended. And we laid a rose at the site where each body was found. Of course, there were 50 women missing at that point. And elders assisted us. They participated in the ceremonies and prayed to send the women off to the other side, into the spirit world, where they can find some comfort and relief from a ravaged lifestyle, to be rid of their pain that they experienced in their short lives. On that day, women, we went up and down the alleyways and stood beside dumpsters, prayed behind flea-infested hotels for justice and for peace for our sisters. The marchers were greeted by drunks and drug addicts, and we had beer bottles thrown at us, but that didn't deter us. This became a yearly event that ended up each time on the steps of the Vancouver Police Station, and where we made demands for justice. We shed tears, and we made recommendations every year to no avail. Not until 2001, for the first time, we got consideration that there was possibly a serial killer in the neighborhood. Robert Picton, a pig farmer, was arrested in early 2002. To date, he has been charged with 16 counts of murder. The pig farm is being combed for DNA. Truckloads of dirt. When I arrived at the site, it looks like a mining excavation. There are belts just overturning the dirt, and they're combing for minute pieces of DNA. With each positive match of DNA, families begin to grieve, and they can only imagine the horror what could have met their loved ones in their final moments. No body parts have been found. There are many unanswered questions regarding the stolen sisters. Why didn't the police react sooner? The pig farm was under surveillance for many years prior to a formal investigation, and it was common knowledge on the street that when women went to party at the Piggy Palace, that they did not return. When women were reported missing, the focus was shifted to their lifestyles rather than on the criminal aspect, as if to say that they deserve their lot in life. The media finds it interesting to report on sensational issues. However, this is not a sensational issue. These are our sisters who are dying. Reports on Aboriginal women often depict us in a negative framework, whether it be about prostitution, addictions, or inadequacies of being a mother, or undeserving of a better life. It is rarely mentioned why Aboriginal women live in such conditions. It has become far too common to have the deaths of Aboriginal women go unreported. The disappearances of our sisters is a serious issue that needs to be addressed. The situation in Vancouver is unique in that no bodies were ever found. However, even in cases where bodies are found, there is little effort to find the killers and to bring them to justice. Questions will be asked and answers sought to these crimes against our most vulnerable in Canadian society, the poorest people, the owners of the land. This is not only a national issue, but rather it is an international issue. I traveled to Geneva in December and I presented a report. The ultimate question I ask is, why is it okay to kill, maim, brutalize, and violate Aboriginal women in this country? I will go on to give you some context on what it is for Aboriginal people in this country and why we call it a war and why we've decided. Ann Pohl is here tonight, and she was very involved in our paper that I took to South Africa. Somewhere in South Africa. I just can't remember the name. Durban! Which we did a report on the undeclared war, and we had sessions with women, and there are many unofficial reports. You just cannot, it's staggering, the number of people who came grieving to our sessions to talk about how many family members were lost and how many were missing. This land ultimately is our land. Unlike what you will hear in history, Canadian history, that we are conquered people, we were never conquered. We never ceded our territories. We signed treaties that were misinterpreted. They were peace treaties. They were peace treaties written so that we wouldn't slaughter the folks who were coming into our territories and violating our boundaries. We signed them in good spirit, and they were misinterpreted. Colonization has been with us for 530 years. Women have not been safe for 530 years. I've never known a time where we can walk freely in our own land and feel safe without being at some sort of risk or threat. The only thing I say I regret is that we had very weak immigration policies. We should have had very tight policies. We should have closed all the borders. We should have, documented. We should have had official passports with pictures and blood types, all on and on. We didn't think about those things because we're basically peaceful people. We were not here to kill people. We were here welcoming and saying that we are willing to share Mother Earth. But as it turned out, the foreigners were not friendly. It took us some time to figure that out, because the way they behaved were very foreign. Unfortunately, by the time that the buffalo were gone, many few nations within our boundaries, known as Canada, have been extinct for many generations. Currently, under the Indian Act, within two generations, there will be nations in the East who will no longer exist under the Indian Act. They will not have a number. So the Indian Act was written just for us, to oppress our people because of our race and because this land was ours, and everything that grew and everything that existed within the boundaries they wanted, because it represented wealth and still does today. We experienced apartheid in our own homelands, on our reservations where we had to live and we had to barely exist. The role of women was seriously eroded, because first off, they took our children and they put... I myself am a survivor of the residential school where we had to live and lost our language and culture and was ravaged there and beaten and raped. And the role of women is something that I struggle and fight for every day as a leader. That the role of women and the strengthening of our role is the answer to the strengthening of our nations as people. It's by no accident that we are the poorest of the poor in this country. We have the highest suicide rate among youth in the world. That we have few jobs. We have lower education and poor health. It's by no accident. It's because of the legislation that was written just for us. In the early part of the, when the colonizers came and as they moved west, They distributed smallpox blankets, which of course you know is germ warfare and biological warfare. So when we talk about New York and the Twin Towers, yes, we feel sorry for them, but we think in our back of our minds, didn't that happen to us? Is there any concern for the millions of people that were killed across Turtle Island? There is a little concern, but when there's 2,000 non-Aboriginal people, it's a big concern. It's a huge concern, and they're actually prepared to go to war for that. For 2,000 people, the residential schools were like prisons, and now we don't have the residential schools, but we have the prisons that are overflowing with our people, not only men. Women are well represented. So we went from residential schools to prisons. They're quite familiar in their structure, actually. And another point is the school system. And when I spoke to teachers in Ottawa a couple months ago, I said to them, the school system is systemically racist. It's racist against people, and specifically the Aboriginal people. So when I say I've been kept out of better places, I really mean it. I mean, our people were not welcomed in these kinds of places. The way the Indian Act was written, if you got a university degree, you had to give up your status, you had to leave your territory. And there's little desire for change, because when people are in power, they do everything to hold on to that power, and it's up to us to bring social change and to force social change. It will not be handed to us. And when people are so accustomed to exploiting people all around the world, not only in Canada, they will continue until we stop them. And it's all about our land and resources. Again, we've been at war. And it's not that we've gone into warfare or combat, but as I said, our people have always been disappearing. Since I could remember as a young child, the first woman I remember disappearing, I phoned home as I got some calls from the Yukon when they saw me on APTN. And I asked them, they said, the one woman that I remember who was killed, it was a hit and run and it was never concluded, was 40 years ago. I was 8 years old when I first remember a woman being killed and where there was no justice served. The bottom line, again, I say, is our land and our resources. They have created a lot of wealth from our land and resources, and we're not part of the plan. We hear of all these negotiations in Ottawa about the First Nations Governance Act. It's no different from the white paper policy that Jean Chrétien himself wrote and prepared to exercise on the First Nations of this land 30 years ago. He was then the Minister of Indian Affairs. He's now our Prime Minister. He has the same agenda. War, when it comes to war, I was saying I haven't been in war where people were killed around me. I did travel to Eritrea and Ethiopia to travel to the war-affected camps a couple of years ago, in which I met with women and got their take on what war was and how it was impacting them. And through interpreters, I learned a lot from them. And as we pass through territories, and when you're in a war active war area, you need to pass through. There's, you know, a lot of formal things, papers you have to produce and such. There were all men at these borders as we passed through. And I didn't see a woman until I went to what they call the refugee camps. And so I asked for interpreters to have a women's circle. And as I passed through all the secured areas through these men, they were all briefing us. They took upon themselves to brief us and tell us what they needed. They wanted more money. They wanted food. They wanted blankets. They wanted these sorts of things. When I went into the women's circle, I asked them one question. I just want to do one circle, and if you could tell me what you want, if there's a message I could take with me wherever I travel, what would that be? And their answer, it was consensus around they wanted peace. At all costs, they wanted peace. They said, it's our sons and our daughters who lose their lives. we brought them into this world, and we don't want them to be killed that way. It's not, nothing is worth it. Nothing in this world is worth sacrificing a son or a daughter for. So when Bush talks about this war, obviously he's very far removed from the realities of war, and it's very sad. So that was my only experience with being in a war area where there was active warfare. I'm hoping that you all will become involved in the anti-war movement. And part of that war is to begin to educate yourselves on the war on Aboriginal people. In Mexico, there are 2,000 women missing. There was an Indigenous Women's Summit, which we sent a representative to. They said there's 2,000 women missing on the border into the United States. I want to quote from my, I can never say the name, Tsisastis from the Cheyenne. A nation is not conquered until the hearts of its women are on the ground. Then it is finished, no matter how brave its warriors or how strong their weapons. And that's when I begin to talk about the value of women, and especially in the Aboriginal community, because we hold the position of the childbearers, and we bring all future generations into the world, and we're apparently highly respected for that. I say apparently because it's only verbally in a lot of cases that people respect us, and their actions is not very consistent with their words. And that includes all the Aboriginal leaders that I come in contact with, but not all, predominantly male Aboriginal leaders, and the leaders of this country who are in office in Ottawa mainly, that I try to impress upon them that this is a very important issue, and I speak about our stolen sisters everywhere I go, whether if it's on the agenda or not. They have to listen to me. I'm always the bearer of bad news. They like to sit around and sip wine and chat and pretend we're friends, and you know, I'm not into I'm not into pretending, let's say. So I give them the news that I have to carry, and it's often very, very truthful and close to reality, as I have done tonight. So I wanted to ask if anybody has any questions or comments. I'd be pleased to hear them, just so I could have a couple sips of water.